Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
We're talking about the voice of the New York Mets. He was the voice of the New York Islanders. He was also the voice of the New York Rangers. One of the most famous goals in the history of the sport was broadcasted by this guy. And I'm talking about the great Howie Rose. Howie, good to talk to you. How you doing?
I'm well, guys. How are you? I didn't realize when I was texted about this, I thought it was all sports you were doing in terms of the top draft picks of the last 50 years. This is just hockey you're doing now?
Well, no. You know what's funny, Howie? So it's all sports. And for whatever reason today, because I didn't make this list. This is not me. It was half fan vote and then half there's this panel that kind of, and it's unknown. I mean, for all I know, you could be on the panel. I don't know. Maybe you're keeping a secret from me. I don't know. But it actually worked out where today was four hockey guys. You know, because okay. Think about it. When you think about draft picks over the last 50 years, the Islanders did pretty well. You know, the Rangers
well, you know
had
what?
Their moments. Yeah.
Yeah. You missed another one by 1 year because the Islanders drafted Dennis Potvin 1-1 in 1973.
I know.
And he'd shoot right up to the top of that list. I
totally agree. You know. And there's a bunch of guys. Potvin, obviously Joe Namath on the football side, where the top 50 just cuts off a little bit. But I'm curious because you obviously remember the dynastic Islander team. When I hear Mike Bossy, I hear Brian Trottier, for those that weren't familiar with them and their contributions to that dynastic Islander team, can you give the younger hockey fan almost a lesson on their greatness?
Well, let me first address the order in which they were just presented.
Yes, please.
Because no disrespect to the great Mike Bossy whatsoever, but I would flip-flop those two and make Brian Trottier ahead of Bossy on the pecking list. Maybe he was.
He actually was. Right. I'm looking at it
again.
Oh,
he was. Okay, you got that? Okay.
Yes, he's ahead by one slot, yes.
Okay, should be, because I can make the case that Brian Trottier, despite being a Hall of Famer, maybe, if not the most, and certainly among the most underrated great players in any sport. Because, you know, he played in an era which quickly produced Wayne Gretzky and then Mario Lemieux. And Brian Trottier is the best two-way center I ever saw, period. Wow. There was nothing on the ice that he could not do. And, you know, some of it's a little bit more subtle than the points that he piles up. He had one of the greatest forechecking shifts I've ever seen his rookie year. In the last minute of a game, the Islanders were ahead trying to close out Buffalo in a playoff game at Nassau Coliseum and clinch that series. Bossy wouldn't let the Sabres get the goaltender out because he was all over the place. Mm. You know, he'd put the body on the defenseman in the left corner trying to move the puck. Next thing you know, they reverse the puck, and there's Trottier in the other corner doing the same thing. And you know, never mind the fact that he scored 500 goals and however many assists. I mean, he was just a great, great player. Mike Bossy may be the best pure goal scorer in the history of the game. And by the way, the cut that you played of Bossy scoring in overtime to win game one of the 1982 Stanley Cup final, Brian Trottier never gave Mike Bossy as good a pass as Canucks defenseman Harold Sneps did. I don't know why he just threw the puck up the middle in the closing seconds of that first overtime, but he put it on the stick of the one guy on the entire planet that you don't want to give the puck to in that spot, in that situation.
What do you think about the goalies? Because King Henry obviously never won a championship. Brodeur had three of them, as Evan was just alluding to. But it's hard to really judge Henrik because we know how good he was. It just never came to fruition for him. And I think he gets penalized in some people's minds. But what say you?
A little bit, yeah. Look, Eddie Jockman was my boyhood idol, okay? And I love him to this day. but he never won the big one. Do you know how many Game Sevens Henrik Lundqvist won?
A lot.
I don't know the exact number myself, but,
a lot.
It's plenty. And to my recollection, Eddie Jockman and the Rangers never had won a Game 7 until Henrik Lundqvist came along. Although, come to think of it now, didn't they go 7 with the Devils in 90? I believe they did. But the point is that, you know, Eddie Jockman, one of the most beloved goalies in the history of the franchise, just could never win the big one. And Henrik Lundqvist did repeatedly, just never won the cup. And I think those are mutually exclusive.
So with Marty Brodeur, I think he gets disrespected two reasons. Obviously, the Devils being the third team in town. And then also this idea that the neutral zone trap almost made him better than what he was. In your opinion, how great was Martin Brodeur?
Well, I mean, the neutral zone trap or the 1-2-2 or whatever you want to call it might minimize scoring chances, but it doesn't mean that it doesn't, you know, affect the degree of difficulty of shots that Marty Brodeur stopped at key points of hockey games. That's overthinking it to me. Marty Brodeur, you know, is in that pantheon of a handful of the greatest goaltenders ever play the game, period, end of story. I wouldn't penalize him for the style the Devils played because when he needed to come up big, he did over and over.
Now, the modern New York Rangers, it starts on Sunday, I should say, 3:00 against Washington. You're not calling the Met games in L.A., right? You're not doing these West Coast trips, so you can fully focus.
You can fully focus on the
– this is perfect for you. Where's your confidence level in terms of this Ranger team going on an extended run? They're obviously huge favorites against Washington. We'll see if it's Carolina or the Islanders. But give me kind of your thoughts going into this postseason with this Ranger team who's had just a brilliant regular season.
You know what? They won the President's Trophy in 94, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And yet, the President's Trophy just makes me nervous.
Because we talked about
all you have to do is, you just look back 1 year at what happened to the Bruins. And, you know, you talked about a couple of guys just now, Marty Brodeur, Henrik Lundqvist. Maybe Tiki takes exception to this as an offensive football player because you could make the case for the quarterback. But the quarterback's only on the field half the time. A hot pitcher. Starting pitcher gets two or three starts in a seven-game postseason series, a closer. He might get in most, if not every single game, but that's kind of hard to do nowadays with the up-downs and all that other stuff. So to me, I have always felt that the goaltender in hockey is the most dominant position player in all of sports. And so you can get someone who just gets on one of those runs and upends every bit of logic and reason and analytic preparation that you could do trying to handicap a series.
Yeah.
Is Igor Shesterkin going to be the Igor Shesterkin that we saw down the stretch in the latter part of the season? Because he had a really rough patch there along the way, which gives you a little cause for concern. It's not just a little pause to wonder if the real Shesterkin's going to show up. You're right. They should beat Washington. I think they're a better playoff team now than they were even 2 months ago. I like the way they finished, but I've just learned over the years, you take nothing for granted. And there are more 1-8 upsets in hockey than in any other sport. So, yeah, they should beat Washington logically. There's no reason to surmise otherwise. But this is the toughest trophy in sports to win. And my biggest apprehension about the Rangers is, do they have the sandpaper to survive 4 rounds of what is a completely different sport than what we see from October until April.
Yeah, and it's a long grind.
That's what I worry about.
It's a long grind. But what about, I think the irrational Ranger fan gets worried about...
That's redundant, by the way.
Yeah, right. But it gets worried...
And count me among them because, you know, I lived it, all right?
But hear me out. They get worried about the towel, the aura of Ovechkin. And the fact that, look, they're big underdogs in this, but you never know with a superstar, great, no question Hall of Famer, and maybe one of his last runs, right? Should that be a concern, or is it just something that Ranger fans are playing negative mind tricks with themselves?
Well, I can give you some historical perspective on that, and it's a little bit different because the team that I'm going to reference right now, or teams really, were better then than certainly this Washington team is now. But Emil Francis's Rangers of the late 60s and early 70s, and I know you guys didn't see them, but for that period of 5 or 6 years, really had about as good a chance as any team in the league to win the Stanley Cup. Larry Brooks calls them the best team never to win the Cup, for what that's worth, but I think Larry's right. And the difference to me was that in Chicago, when they lost a couple of playoff series to the Blackhawks, it was always Hull and Mikita. With the Bruins, it was always Orr. And with the Canadians, it was any one of a half a dozen of them. So you can have a transcendent player like an Alex Ovechkin who proves to be the difference. One way to mitigate that is stay the heck out of the penalty box. Yeah. Because, you know, that's where Ovechkin can really kill you at this point. I just don't know that the support group is there. And at this stage of Ovechkin's career, he can carry them. But you know what? You tell a Ranger fan who doesn't have to be in his 60s or 70s about the Washington Capitals, and I'll throw a name at you you might not remember or recognize. You ever hear of John Druce? No. Yeah, right. Neither did most people who watched hockey in 1990. And John Druce all of a sudden became Rocket Richard.
Right.
And that's how the Rangers lost the playoff series to the Washington Capitals, because of the unexpected. A guy named John Druce who had the series of his life. It happens. So, you know, again, there's no real logical formula which suggests that the Capitals should win this series. But when you've got one of the all-time great players in Ovechkin, who showed in the last 2 months of the season that there's maybe a little more left there than people were giving him credit for, then I think that, obviously, you've got something to worry about. But the Rangers have a big edge in goal. I think the Rangers have a much deeper team, and there's no reason they shouldn't win the series in 5 or 6.
We shall see. We're talking to the great Howie Rose. Your thoughts. Obviously, we found out a couple days ago about John Sterling retiring. You've had a chance to, like, play his clips back in the day as doing updates and doing Mets Extra, and now as someone doing the same job, the voice of a generation, because you are the voice of a generation to young Met fans. That's Howie Rose. Give me your thoughts about John Sterling and his career.
Well, there's one guy who could have pulled this off the way he just did, and that's John. I mean, who spends all winter thinking, this is great, this is fantastic, I'm getting my life back, and then spring training comes along, and, you know, I think John did all of one spring training game and then begins the season, and after a couple of weeks says, nah, I've had enough after all these years. When he refused to miss an inning, when he refused to miss a game, for all those years, I mean, this is the most John thing John's ever done. And I say that, you know, lovingly, because I've known him for 50 years. And I could tell you John stories that would knock your socks off, but I'm not sure John would appreciate all of them. So I'll tease you with that a little bit. But, I mean, he was just a piece of work. He was probably, I don't want to put him in the past tense, he is. And I'm right on this list too, but John takes it to another level. Maybe the least technically adept human being in handling basic equipment that any of us has to handle of anyone in the business. And I'm sorry, he can't ascribe that to being 85 going on 86 years of age. I remember sitting with him in the press box in 1979 during the Ranger Islander playoff series. He had no longer been doing the Islanders by that point. I don't think he was with WMCA any longer, and I don't remember who he was working for at the time. But he and myself and a few others were responsible for going into the locker rooms after games and taping interviews with players and then using them wherever we used them. In my case, back then it was on WHN. I'm not sure where John was, but let me tell you something. Starting your tape recorder in order to do an interview involved two things. Really, one. Simultaneously pressing a red and white button, play and record. Record was the red. John not only couldn't do that, he couldn't get the microphone hooked into the machine because all he had to do was just plug it in. It was hysterical. And this is, what, 45 years ago? So, you know, he was in the prime of his life, prime of his career. But that's John. I mean, it's just John. And then he gets behind the microphone and he's got this perfect, mellifluous broadcast voice that comes from the heavens, right? Mm-hmm. Any single one of us in this business would kill for John's voice. One thing that you guys won't remember, and I don't think John has ever gotten enough credit for because it didn't end really well, was the quality of the talk show that he did when he was doing sports talk in the early 70s, really through the mid and into the latter 70s on WMCA. John knew a little bit about everything, transcending sports. And this is before ESPN came along and before there was a consciousness in New York about college sports to the extent that it is now. I mean, he knew who the outside linebacker was for Oklahoma. And you know, he could tell you anything about the most obscure college basketball program in the country, along with knowing everything about the NBA, the NHL, and the other major pro sports. Incredibly well-read, incredibly bright, and just the personality that I think, you know, is one of the most unique in the history of sports in this market.
No question. Howie, we appreciate it. Enjoy the break. Enjoy the hockey. And we look forward to hearing you calling the Met games when they come home.
I appreciate that. Thanks, guys.
Appreciate you, Howie.
The great Howie Rose.